the battlefield is right here in Howe. We are fighting an invisible enemy, and we are being led by President Trump into this battle. And it's tough. It's hard for all of us. I know we're all learning to manage from our homes, staying safe, staying healthy is the most important thing right now. And ensuring that our fellow Americans will not contract the coronavirus is the reason why we're doing this. But there's a lot of issues, a lot of questions. And I know so many of you out there have them because I have those questions too. I sit at home, I'm trying to, every day, trying to work with my daughter during the week on her school assignments, ensure that she's all caught up. And as we were doing that, lo and behold, Governor Northam here in Virginia extended basically this lockdown until June 10th. And I was getting text messages from my friends and emails from the teachers at school, as well as emails from her friends' mothers. And they were telling me, you know, like, how can we stay in touch? How can our daughters still communicate? It's just a totally new world. And I feel for all of us, because I'm right there with you. I'm sitting right there with you wondering, what does this all mean? What does this mean to small business? Now, under Governor Northam's directive, according to this directive, even non-essential businesses can stay open as long as there's 10 or less inside the business. So that's going to be a little different. But they are asking that nobody leave their home unless it's essential. So a little bit of a conflict there. What does it all mean? How are the small businesses going to survive this? We do know with the $2.2 trillion package that was passed by Congress, which some people aren't too happy about. Others are saying this is the only thing we can do to save our small businesses. And thank God there's something out there for small business owners and for regular Americans who are out there trying to figure out, how am I going to manage my life? You know, also really interesting, and I don't mean to walk away from the small business right now, but what about contractors? What about people that clean people's homes or are no longer being able to go into the homes to clean the homes because maybe people don't want them there? I know this has happened out here in Virginia, you know, where they're not going to have a job. The unemployment rates are skyrocketing across the country. And we've seen even in places like Colorado, where we're not hearing of, you know, a lot of cases of coronavirus or a lot of infections, their unemployment went up 3 days ago. I was reading over 736%. So over 736% has increased in unemployment there. Those are pretty frightening numbers. And I'm not going to try to sugarcoat this for you, because none of us have been here. None of us have been in this situation before, because frankly, this situation has not existed. It has not existed before. We have a president who is doing an incredible job. He is at the front line. He is the general in this war against this invisible enemy. He's listening to his top doctors, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Birx, others who are talking to him at the White House, constantly briefing him, our intelligence agencies. Remember, because this isn't just about coronavirus and not spreading the virus, which is very important. Lives are at stake here. I understand that. This is also about the national security of our nation. And what will enemy state actors do? How will they take advantage of this? We see even right now, Prime Minister Boris in England right now saying China's going to pay a big price for this. China is going to pay a heavy price for this. We are going to hold China accountable. Why? Because the Chinese lied. The Chinese communist government lied from the beginning about COVID-19. And everyone is affected now. This is a global pandemic. And we are still trying to wrap our heads around it. And we don't have a lot of answers. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling like I'm not getting all the answers. I want to know what's going on in our hospitals. Are these stats factual? Are all these statistics that we are getting globally factual? You know, right now we know that the White House is looking at random testing, random sampling testing, which is what needs to take place. Lisa Booth talked about this on Steve Hilton's show with me this past Sunday, The Next Revolution. We talked about this, the importance of this, of having random sampling testing so that we actually have some facts to deal with. And that's what's important. But we don't have all those facts. We don't even know what happened in Iran. We don't even know what was going on in China. What are the actual numbers of dead? What were the actual numbers of infected? We don't know that. We also know that the World Health Organization made a number of mistakes in the beginning. First, saying and even issuing an edict saying that China said this is not transmissible from person to person. Remember that? And now we're dealing with the media and this ongoing battle in the media to go after President Trump, even in a time of crisis, even in this time of war. He is out there every single day, America. He is talking directly to you. He is talking to you through his Twitter. He is talking to you through all of the social media. And he is talking to you every day from White House press briefings. Every day, trying to inform you of what he knows and the direction he is going to take the country. And guess what? There are people in the media and there are media organizations that do not want you to hear this. That's how much they don't like Trump. That is Trump derangement syndrome. President Trump has done more and has gone above and beyond what many presidents have not done in the past. Just look at what happened during swine flu. Look at some of the other issues that we faced, even under Obama, under President Bush, under other presidents. This president is out there every single day, talking to reporters, talking directly to the public, despite the fact that people are targeting him every single day. And this is the reason why I have Tim on today. Tim Murtaugh is the director of communications for the Donald J. Trump campaign. And he's going to be talking directly to you. He's going to tell you, he's going to tell me what the campaign has been doing during this crisis, how they've been handling the campaign, especially under lockdown. Because think about this, it's every single one of us. We're in this together. And we need to be informed. And we need to remember that November is an election. It's the presidential election. We are now in a crisis that we never imagined ourselves being in. I've talked to you about this before. This is a black swan event. This is something that was unexpected, something that came at us sideways, something that we're all trying to figure out together. And I know that Tim Murtaugh is going to be able to answer some of these questions to you. I've spoken with him. He understands what's going on here, and the campaign is working diligently to try to help us understand this crisis, try to move forward, even though it feels like we're sitting still. It's so crazy. But I look forward to having him on. I know you're going to enjoy this interview. It's incredible. I know you won't regret it. So grateful, Tim, to have you on the show today. And I'm so looking forward to talking with you. Just like everyone else, we are on lockdown. And obviously today, Governor Northam here in Virginia has basically, where I live, has extended the lockdown, so to speak, until June 10th. And I know a lot of people are concerned about that. I know the White House, as well as campaign employees across the country, are also going through the same. Can you talk to me a little bit about that and maybe personally how you're handling it?
Yeah, we've been on from the Trump campaign. Our offices are in Virginia. It's the RNC Annex, as we call it, and it's in Roslyn, Virginia, in Arlington County. And so we've been working remotely for a little more than 2 weeks now. And The president made his recommendation yesterday that everyone stay in the social distancing situation until the end of April. And we had been planning on staying home and working remotely until at least April 24th anyway, under the direction of our campaign manager, Brad Parscale. And so that's what we're doing. And you're right, the governor of Virginia today issued another stay-at-home order until June 10th. And so that stretches out 6 weeks beyond what the president right now envisions. And so, you know, we're just taking everything as a wait and see and proceeding. This has not, in fact, impeded the ability of the campaign to accomplish our goals one bit. While we are not doing rallies or any other in-person events like fundraisers, everything else that the campaign is doing goes on as planned. Just because that we're not doing rallies right now doesn't mean that all the data, the voter data that we have gathered over the last 5 years, suddenly cease to exist. I'll give you an example. Last week was what we call the National Week of Action, and our volunteers made over 3 million phone calls to voters in key states during the course of that week. And on Saturday, at the end of that week, just in one day, our National Day of Action, volunteers made 1.5 million phone calls to voters in key states. 1.5 million calls just on one day. Now, there
That's
is
incredible.
No way on earth that Joe Biden or any of the Democrats could ever match that, because, you know, Joe Biden does not have a national operation. He couldn't scrap together 15,000 phone calls, let alone 1.5 million. So we're still campaigning. We're still reaching voters. We're getting the president's message out and amplifying all the good work that he's doing to keep the country safe.
Well, I just want to go to Joe Biden really quickly, because obviously he's giving his updates. There's a lot of issues with the updates that he's been pushing out on social media, as well as his interviews that he's been conducting with media, like others, social distancing from remote locations. And I just want to play a clip right here really quick, and I want to get your take on it, because as the president is trying to lead this country in this battle, in this war against this invisible enemy, the, you know, coronavirus, COVID-19, we see that the Democrats, along with some of the media, have been politicizing it. But I want to play this clip for you really quickly, and then I want to get your take on it. And I also want to know what you think the media is failing to do after you hear it.
Beef up the number of responders dealing with these crush of cases. And in addition to that, we have to make sure that we are in a position that we are. Well, let me go to the second thing. I've spoken enough on it. The president must use the Defense Production Act.
I mean,
yeah,
I'm really concerned.
I'm familiar
here
with that clip.
I'm really concerned here. I'm listening to former Vice President Joe Biden. I'm hearing him talk. He's lost in his thoughts. He can't keep his thoughts together. At first, you know, it seems kind of funny because these are gaffes. We remember Corn Pop story, this other story from South Africa where nobody could prove that he was actually arrested in South Africa. There's all of these questions surrounding basically his health in a lot of ways. But the media isn't really focused on that. They're not doing that. They're not asking the right questions here. Is that at all concerning?
Well, I mean, I think the way that the president has described it all along, he's come up with a number of different ways to describe Joe Biden. You know, he's called him Sleepy Joe. But my favorite one is where he says, listen, everybody knows it's true. Joe Biden has lost his fastball, which is, you know, kind of a baseball reference because the president was actually quite a good ball player when he was a younger man, I'm told. You know, Joe Biden, look, the bottom line is he was a terrible candidate the first two times he ran for president. I don't know why anybody ever thought that he would be a better candidate the third time around. In fact, he's worse. You know, he's been sitting on the shelf for a few years. It's not like he you know, stayed in game shape or anything like that. And you go and that clip you just played is one of 100 different ones you could play from his different interviews and different broadcasts he's done from his basement in Wilmington, Delaware. He had one just today where he was a live interview on MSNBC, and he was clearly looking down at notes during the course of a live television interview, which is, I got to tell you, a wonderful crutch to be able to have, having done lots and lots of live television hits with no notes. It'd be awesome to consult with notes. And so there's Biden clearly looking down at notes, and he still lost his train of thought. And now you have blue checkmark journalists all over Twitter today, actually now wondering. Charles Blow from the New York Times said, why does he make me nervous? Well, I'll tell you why he makes you nervous is because this is your candidate. He is going to be your nominee, and he's terrible. You know, I mean, the Democrats, they were so afraid that they were going to end up with Bernie Sanders that they had already, let's a little history lesson maybe in order for some people who might not remember the sequence of events. But leading up to the, before the South Carolina primary, the Democrat Party had discarded Joe Biden. They had decided that he was cooked. He was finished. He was yesterday's news. And they leaned him up against the wall in the corner, and they were done with him. They had discarded him. And then they realized, oh, no, you know, Bloomberg flamed out. And they were scared to death that they were going to get left with Bernie Sanders as their nominee. So they went over and they looked around for somebody who was still, you know, possibly able to carry the torch. And they found old Joe Biden leaned up in the corner. And they said, come on, Joe, you're back in the game. Right. So he didn't get, resuscitated or rehabilitated during the South Carolina primary. He got rescued. And then the Democrat Party is going to be, and I think they're already waking up to this, they're going to be like that guy in Las Vegas who wakes up one day and thinks to himself, oh, man, did I get married last night? You know, and Joe Biden is going to be their nominee and they're stuck with him.
Well, they're stuck with him, but they're pushing him and they're not asking the right questions when it comes to Joe Biden. That's pretty apparent. And now that we're dealing with obviously a very serious crisis, dealing with escalating numbers in New York of COVID-19 patients and seeing what's happening across the country, there's a lot of concern among just regular citizens who are out there who wanted to be a part of the campaign. This is regardless of whether they're independent, Democrat, or Republican, but we're really not focused this year so much so on the campaign because, I mean, there's a whole set of months that are going to be missing out on actually going out there, being able to communicate with the people directly. Is that a concern for the campaign at all right now? I mean, no, you're doing a great job making those phone calls and everything, but being able to get out there with the people, which is what President Trump does so well. Talking directly to the crowds, talking directly to the people. Is there a big concern here that maybe all the right questions aren't being asked of Joe Biden and everything is kind of being buried right now as far as the election in November? Is there any concern that we might not be able to get back up on our feet again?
No, I think this will pass. I think we all share the president's optimism that this is a bad situation that the country is in right now. It is not one of our own making, and we will get through it. This will pass. And right now, it's true that the president is not able to get out and do his rallies or do, you know, large fundraising events or things of that nature. But that's because he's got a job to do. He's the president of the United States, and Americans can see him every single day, briefing the nation on what's going on with the federal government's response to the coronavirus. And he stands there with the vice president and with Dr. Fauci and with Dr. Birx and with varying members of his cabinet. Yesterday, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, my former boss, was up there and giving people the information about how the food supply chain is intact and farmers are still at work and the truck drivers are still at work and people are still stocking the shelves in your supermarkets. This is the message of the president right now, assuring the American people that their federal government is at work and working to protect them, working on a vaccine, working to get the right equipment to the hospitals where it's needed most, masks and ventilators and respirators and all those sorts of things, PPE, personal protection equipment, things that people never heard of a month ago. Most Americans never heard of such talk until about a month ago. But the president is on the case and doing that. And so that is the president doing his job, and the American people can see it. And I think that's reflected in the series of public polls that came out at the end of last week, which showed every single one of them showed the president at much greater than 50% approval rating for the job he's doing as leading the country through the coronavirus problem. And it capped off with the Gallup poll, which showed that 60% of Americans approve of the job that the president is doing. And so, you know, I think while we would like for the country not to be going through this, of course, the president has a job to do, and the American people are responding to that.
Let's talk about that, because the president does have a job to do. He is doing it. We see him every day at, you know, speaking to the people directly from the White House, to the reporters, answering questions with the coronavirus task force. But now we see the media shifting, and we've heard it from MSNBC. We've seen CNN. We've seen other news outlets basically saying, NPR as well, some of their local affiliates saying, we're just not going to run his press briefings anymore. We're not going to run these press briefings. We shouldn't run these press briefings. Or having people out there who are certainly against President Trump. It's such a failure to the American people when the American people can't hear directly from their commander in chief. And obviously, based on the Gallup poll, I saw that Gallup poll. It was incredible, 60%. So you know it includes Democrats and independents. It's not just about Republicans. When you see the media shifting like this, and not all media, but some of the mainstream media actually shifting like this, when you read those editorials in the Washington Post or in the New York Times, Tim, how does the president handle this? How do you respond to this when there's actually media working against the people being informed?
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. I had an op-ed published yesterday, I think, on RealClearPolitics.com talking about this very thing. And what has happened here is the president is leading this country through this war with the coronavirus. And you've got the media and their pals, Joe Biden and the Democrats, having opted to assume the role of the opposition, which is really an incredible position for people to take. The president is leading the country through a very severe crisis, and these folks have decided to be the opponents during the course of that war. It's amazing. And with respect to making noise and, in fact, maybe carrying through and not carrying the president's briefing, let's remember that this is the same press corps who has complained endlessly about not having any White House press secretary briefings. That is, not having the press secretary stand up at the podium and take incoming fire from the press every single day. Never mind the fact that they had more access to President Trump than any other president before him in history, going back and forth to the helicopter all the time, and he would take questions 3-4 times a week. They had much more access to this president than anybody else. The reason why the press secretary would brief the reporters in a typical White House is because the press secretary takes the place of the president. When they don't have access to the president, the press secretary is the proxy. In this case, they always had access to President Trump. So the briefings really never made sense. Secondly, you see why the briefings made no sense after a while for the press secretary, because you can see the reporters grandstanding. All these things are a chance for them to get their questions asked on tape of them standing up and being, you know, let's face it, jerks to the president of the United States. And they want to get their moment in the sun captured on videotape so they can all sell their books and become media stars in their own right. And I don't know what in the world these people are thinking, where they think that it's more important to have some sort of left-leaning political analyst tell viewers what the president is saying rather than have the president say it right to them. But I let's cut to the chase. We know the answer. They know that the president is being effective by this, and they know that the American people are responding, and they just can't have that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I want to play a clip right here, and this is this was at the press briefing. This is Trump to PBS's Yamiche, and I'm going to probably pronounce her name wrong, Alessandor. But why can you play that, Adam? Play that clip.
You said repeatedly that you think that some of the equipment that governors are requesting, they don't actually need. You said New York might need, not need 30,000. You said it on Sean Hannity's Fox News. You said that you might.
Why don't you people act? Let me ask you.
You said some state.
Why don't you act in a little more positive? It's always trying to
get you. My question to you is.
Get you. And you know what? That's why nobody trusts the media anymore.
My question to you is, how is that going to impact?
Excuse me, you didn't hear me. That's why you used to work for the Times and now you work for somebody else. Look, let me tell you something. Be nice. Don't
be threatening. Mr. President, my question
is. Don't be threatening. Be nice. Go ahead.
So the president can't even get a word reported edgewise half the time when the reporters continually target him. And it is a gotcha, gotcha. You can see it happening over and over again at the press briefings. And then this is the second part. If you could respond to that interaction where he talks about just being nice, just stop trying to be the gotcha reporter. And secondly, he does talk to the American people every day on Twitter. He speaks to us directly. And can you talk a little bit about that strategy? Because I think this is the first president we've ever seen utilize social media the way he has, to such an extent that it almost cuts out the middleman. It's like, I'm talking to you directly. I don't need to talk through a reporter.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the president is really the best at that. We see him take on reporters and call them out on their crazy questions. He did it a couple of times yesterday, one to Jeremy Dimon, who read, again, another practice that they use is they truncate quotes and they read back or they report only part of a quote. In this case, yesterday was Jeremy Dimon saying, Mr. President, you said that people should be appreciative of what we're doing. And the president said, yeah, that, all right, continue. Why do you cut it off? Keep going. Why don't you read the rest of the quote? You know, the rest of the quote is, and he talks about the entire federal government response and FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers. And then in the press conference, he went on to say, and all these private companies that are doing this great work, manufacturing these things that they don't normally manufacture in order to help the American effort. And they do that all the time. They cut it off. They selectively quote and selectively edit what the president has had to say. But here's why they're determined to trip him up and get him off TV for these briefings, is that they probably see the same data that we do. Internally, in our numbers that we look at, we know for certain that there is a substantially higher rate of positive reaction from people when they hear the ideas and the message of the administration straight from the president's mouth. We tested it during the State of the Union. We know it's true during rally speeches. And we know through public polling that it's effective when he's been doing these daily briefings that are nationally televised. When people hear straight from the president, they react so positively. And the Democrats, it freaks them out. We know that. And so what they have to want to do is to try to either squelch him entirely and not allow him to have these briefings, or they try to filter it and cut it up and dice it and slice it for the evening news in order to make it appear that the president was conveying a message that, in fact, he did not convey. And so that's really the thing. The president is so effective at talking directly to the people. And if he can do it unfiltered, he's just a master at it, and it works for him wonderfully. That's why he also goes around the national media. And as he does when we were doing rallies, he would always have a local TV interview right before he went on stage or just after he came off as well. Because when you talk to local media, that's where most people get their news, not from CNN, certainly.
Well, absolutely. And I got to say, from covering the president in 2016, who was then candidate Trump, you know, being at the rallies and seeing the energy that's brought to the rallies, the people, the lines, you know, thousands of people waiting, overflow. And we've seen that even this year, you know, but for me personally, experiencing that was an incredible thing, because he could really connect with the American people. He really connects with the worker, the heart of America, which is in the heartland. I remember being in Wisconsin, seeing the same thing, the reaction of people to the president. And that's something I think that the media, you know, had always had this exclusivity, right? There was always an exclusivity between a president and the top reporters at the White House. They would get leaked stories. They would have, you know, they would buddy up with people in the West Wing. In this case, the president saying, well, we don't need to do that. We just need to talk directly to the American people. And once I do that, it's fine. You need to report the facts. But I do want to go to the Democrats really quick, because Nancy Pelosi has gotten a lot of backlash for what she said. I want to play this clip because I was stunned, actually, when I heard her say it. And I know a lot of people were, including the president. Could we play the Nancy Pelosi clip, Adam? Thanks.
We have to have testing, testing, testing. That's what we said from the start, before we can evaluate what the nature of it is in some of these other regions as well. I don't know what the purpose of that is. I don't know what the scientists are saying to him. I don't know what the scientists said to him. When did the president know about this? And what did he know? What did he know, and when did he know it? That's for an after-action review. But as the president fiddles, people are dying, and we have to, we just have to take every precaution.
I mean, it's incredible that the president has done so much, Tim, and is out there every single day, but the Democrats are politicizing this crisis in such a way that they're trying to, and I've seen this, we saw this with Chuck Todd, asking Vice President, former Vice President Joe Biden, if, you know, if the president has blood on his hands. How does the campaign respond to these type of outrageous, outrageous disinformation campaigns coming from the Democrats and coming from people that apparently have Trump derangement syndrome?
Well, they do. They do have Trump derangement system syndrome. And the way we answer it is that we repeat the facts, and we repeat them over and over and over again as often and as loudly as we can. The fact is the CDC began its work on the coronavirus on January 6th. That is really very early. And you know what was happening on January 6th? The Democrats were still trying to impeach and remove the president. But let's remember that the acquittal vote in the impeachment case did not occur until the first week of February. So all the way up to the end of the first week in February, the only thing the Democrats cared about was trying to get rid of this president over the bogus, nonsensical Ukraine business, right? So
right.
All the while, the administration was already working on the coronavirus, all Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the rest of the Democrats, and Joe Biden was cheerleading right along with them, all they cared about was getting rid of this president. Meanwhile, he was already at work on the coronavirus when he restricted travel from China on January 31st, right? Said that people couldn't come from certain parts of China because of the spread of the virus. Joe Biden, later that same day, said it was xenophobic, right? Called Donald Trump racist for doing it. So we know right away that Joe Biden would not have restricted travel from China because he said it was racist. So we can only assume from that he wouldn't have done it. And from then on, Dr. Fauci, and we do really admire and respect Dr. Fauci's learned experience in matters like this. Dr. Fauci said that put the United States well ahead of the curve by restricting travel as early as the president did. That put us well ahead of the curve. And that was January 31st. And again, remember, the World Health Organization didn't even give this virus a name until midway through February. So the president was already taking strong, decisive, and potentially politically unpopular actions to do this. He has been way ahead of this and has been out in front, and the American people can see it. And every single day, he's out there giving updates. And meanwhile, Joe Biden is left in his basement just lobbing ineffective partisan bombs from the sidelines. And every time Biden comes out with a list of things that he says President Trump should do, most of the things are things that the president has already done. And it's ridiculous. Like, for example, to use the Defense Production Act to get the private sector involved in producing materials that we need. The day before Biden said that, Trump actually did it. So Biden comes out the next day and says, you know, the president ought to do this. And we say, Joe, he did that yesterday, old buddy. Hate to break it to you, you know. And so
I remember that.
Time after time, Joe Biden is just, I don't know, he slept through it. Maybe he didn't get his mid-morning nap. I don't know. But he's coming out with these pronouncements about stuff that the president should do that he's already done. And so the way we combat this misinformation that's coming from the Democrats is that we just keep fighting, because the president's not going to give up, and neither is his campaign. You see that every day.
So does that take the social media effort to a whole new level, particularly if you can't get the full range of cable news outlets to tell the truth, to report the truth, to air the daily pressers from the White House with the coronavirus task force? How does the campaign structure itself? How does it work so that it can get the information out to the American people and get the truth out there so that there could be a little bit? I think when people are armed with knowledge, when they have the facts, they can make better decisions, right? And so it's a big battle for the campaign, I'm assuming, to get all that information out there and to ensure that there's a balance, because the American people right now feel a lot of uncertainty. And I think that comes from every state having their own You know, their governors making their own decisions about what direction to take the state and how to handle the virus, from Texas all the way to New York. We see varying plans on how to handle this. So how is it with the campaign? How does the campaign do its best to get the information out? And where can people go to get the right information?
Well, it is a tough battle, and it's one that we fight really from before the sun comes up until well after it's most people's bedtimes. Our war room is always on the clock. We have an incredible team of folks in there, men and women who are fighting the fight for President Trump and the country. And I would encourage people to follow them on Twitter, and that handle is easy to remember. It's at War Room. I'm sorry. Let me start this again. It's at Trump War Room. It really is the up to the minute. It takes apart the bad reporting. It takes apart things that Joe Biden and all the other Democrats say, and it promotes the president's positive message. Another good one to follow is at Team Trump, which is really the overarching, the biggest handle that we have, with the most followers on the campaign. But at Trump War Room is a good one if you want really your things you can go into battle with when you argue with your liberal friends. And you know, it's a lot of times it is frustrating because it seems like it never ends. For example, you know, the president was talking with great optimism about a new drug that could be used in the battle to treat people who have actually contracted COVID-19.
And this was hydrochloroquine.
And next thing you know, there's this unfortunate story about a tragic situation in Arizona where a man and woman, a husband and wife, took fish tank cleaner and ingested it because it contained some fragment of one of those chemicals in the ingredient list. So they ingested the fish tank cleaner. And the next thing you know, NBC and the rest of the media follows along, of course. They've pinned it all on Trump. And the NBC actually, you know, they were practically putting together a murder case against the president because the husband in the situation sadly died. But they wanted to make it President Trump's fault that the people drank aquarium parasite treatment chemicals. I mean, seriously,
this is the way
the media has gone. And so we have to fight that and say, listen, to anyone who has any modicum of common sense, none of what you are reporting makes sense. And I think that people can see that. I think that clear thinking Americans, whether right or left, can see that the media has just gone off the deep end. And so we keep fighting and we publish op-eds and we come on podcasts like yours, Sarah. And we do a lot of talk radio and we try to get on as many television shows as we can. And we just keep fighting and fighting and fighting. And we try to access local media as best we can as well. And so, you know, it's never ending battle because we're outnumbered. There's no question of that. It's going to be Joe Biden and the Democrats. So roughly half of the country right there, plus just about the entirety of the national news media. So it's an uphill fight, but it was an uphill fight the first time. Nobody thought you would ever call him President Trump in the first place, right? And here we are headed towards his reelection.
Well, I got to tell you, it's important that the American people have access, that they know who they're dealing with, and that they understand that the media is really not what it used to be, and that a lot of what they're seeing on CNN, MSNBC, some of the other media outlets out there that are pretending, and I use the word pretending, to be objective, aren't, and that they definitely have it out for President Trump. And it's important for all of us to really get the truth out there. If I could ask you one more question, Tim, what do you see as the best case scenario here? You know, there's a lot of Americans out there that are really worried. You have your ear to the ground. You know what's going on at the White House. What is the best case scenario for everyone here? And is there a light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, I believe there is. I know there is. This won't last forever. But what are you hearing coming from the White House?
Well, yes, there is definitely a light at the end of the tunnel, and America will survive this. And the president has a very, very important job. He's really, truly trying to save the country. And it's two things, right? He has to protect the health and safety of the American people. And he also has to safeguard the economy, because if we ride it out from a medical perspective and we come out where people are healthy again and the virus has died away, but our economy is in shambles and would take years to repair, if ever, you know, if we turn the country off for 6-9 months, a year, I mean, that might not be something that we can recover from, really. So he's got a lot of things on his plate. But the president is up to the challenge. He knows He's got himself surrounded by the best medical experts that this country has to offer, and he is following their advice. Dr. Fauci says the president always listens to me when I offer my medical or scientific opinion. And so we will get through this from a perspective of the coronavirus. And the president is also taking great steps to make sure that the economy is protected. You see the bills that he signed in recent days,
right.
And I think that's going to take care of a lot of the concerns of the small businesses are very much a factor in this. About two-thirds of the jobs in this country are in small businesses, and we can't just have them turned off for 3 months at a time. Most people don't have that much in reserve to be able to come back to life after 3 months of being closed. And so you want to make sure that those people can survive and come out the other end. And so that's why the president says, you know, aspirationally, he wants to get things moving as quickly as possible, at least in parts of the country that are safer than others. There are hot spots and there are places where there are not outbreaks, because we have to be able to get the country back in motion again. We're not built to be turned off for a sustained period of time. The president knows that. So, and I think he's got all the people that are right to be assembled, the best minds on the economic side and on the medical side, and we will come through this. It may be difficult for certain periods of time. It hasn't been easy so far. I think everybody can understand that from their own personal experiences so far, but we will get through this. This is the greatest country that has ever been seen on the face of the earth, and we will continue to be so. President Trump has undying faith in this country and the people who built it and the people who live here today. And together, we're all going to get through it. That's his strong, strong belief.
I absolutely believe that too, Tim. We have been through situations just as detrimental, if not far worse, and our nation has survived it. And for every one of you out there, please, please follow at Trump War Room. You will get information directly from the president, directly from the White House. You'll be able to see what's going on from here, from the bubble, the lockdown bubble, I call it, in Washington, D.C. And Tim, thank you so much for being a part of this show, for the Sarah Carter Show, and for being a part of this great administration, which I believe is going to pull us through this. And I believe, you know, as a small business owner, I'm just as concerned. I believe, though, in this presidency. I believe in this president, and I believe we're going to make it through it together.
I believe so, too, Sarah, and thank you for everything that you do. And I might as well plug my own Twitter handle as well. It's at
Tim Murtaugh. I would love that.
Sure, at Tim Murtaugh, which is M-U-R-T-A-U-G-H, at Tim Murtaugh, one word. So, and I appreciate your time, Sarah. You're doing great work. And you're a valued team member, and I know that with folks like you on our side, we can't help but win. And it's gonna be a resounding victory for President Trump. He will be reelected this November. We have no doubt about that.
Well, I certainly believe that, and I know hearing from all of the listeners out there, everybody who's been writing here at the Sarah Carter Show, and everyone who reaches out to me on Twitter, they say the same thing. I think the big concern now is just getting through this crisis and making sure that we're all healthy and happy and heading to the polls in November. Thank you so much, Tim, for being with me.
Thank you, Sarah.
Tim's right. The media is spinning a lot of the information that's coming out of the White House. In fact, the fact that they don't want to run the daily briefings from the White House with the coronavirus task force, this isn't just about President Trump, although so important that we hear directly from our president in a time of crisis, especially when he's leading our nation and he's doing a great job of leading our nation. He is out there every single day. He isn't walking away from this. He is on the front lines. He's listening to Dr. Fauci. He's listening to Dr. Birx. We need to listen to him, and we need to be informed, and we need to be able to hear from all of the experts at the White House, the ones that are briefing the president every single day. And he was right. I mean, they complained before. Remember, the media complained over and over again that President Trump wasn't doing enough, that he wasn't giving them what they wanted, which was these daily briefings every day. Well, now they're getting it, and now they want to spin it, and now they don't want you to have it. Well, that's just not right, and that's just not acceptable. Not in a time when we are being asked to do our part as soldiers on the front line as well. Against this virus. We need all the information. We need to stand behind our president and the White House and all the efforts of our healthcare professionals, God bless them, that are doing a great job out there, that are helping us all get through this. And we will get through it. And I think that was the best part of the interview. And talking with Tim is like, we're going to get through this. We're a fantastic nation built on principles that exceed any other place on planet Earth. And we get through these crises together. We can't do it if we rip each other apart. We can only do this if we stand together and we support our administration, we support the people on the front lines, and we support one another. And that's the most important message I think I can give to you today. I know we are. Remember, don't forget your neighbors. Don't forget the people that live around you. Don't forget to send a message to people that might not be able to get out, those that could be most afflicted with this, people who have low immune systems or who are elderly. Let's not forget them. And remember that we are all in this together. It's me, you, our families. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed today's episode. And if you did, please give us 5 stars and review us on iTunes. Also, please make sure to go check out all of the stories we have posted at sarahacarter.com and follow me on Twitter at sarahcarterdc. Remember, here at the Sarah Carter Show, we are taking the story back, folks. Thank you and see you next week.